Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey guys, I'd like to thank everyone who has pre-ordered my book, Life of the Party. As you can tell from my Twitter feed, if you tweet your receipt, I follow, retweet, and favorite you. As it turns out, Brendan Walsh and Tom Zger are even more excited than me about the pre-sales of my book, Life of the Party, and have asked to be included on all your tweets. So hook my bros up. Include at Brendan Walsh and at Tom Segura on anything regarding Life of the Party. Because as they'll tell you, your pre-order determines how well this book does opening week, and how well it does opening week determines how well it does overall. So if you haven't already, please go to BurtBurtBurt.com and pre-order my book, Life of the Party. Chicago, March 14th to 15th. West Palm, March 21st and 22nd. Edmonton, April 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Today's guest, stand-up comedian Tony Hinchcliffe.
This is the
Birdcast. Yep. Yeah, that is pretty fucking... That is the...
Did they give that to whoever's on, or did you ask for it, or...
I don't know. I don't think you can... Justin Stengel was... Is still the executive producer, or was the executive producer of Letterman. Him and his brother were head writers and executive producers. And he's a friend of mine, and he is probably the reason I got on. I don't think Eddie Bro wanted me on.
Right.
Although Eddie Bro was very nice to see Eddie Bro, like when... Right before I was about to go on stage, Eddie... Do you know Eddie?
Yeah.
Eddie came over and gave me like a hug and was like, just have fun. Dave loves you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was really nice, but I don't think Eddie, I think Eddie, you know, is very like, I know he didn't pass me as a comic.
Right.
He had good notes though. He had really good notes. He said I was too dirty. And I talked too much about race, which was extremely accurate. I had like some Mexican joke that I wanted to do. And he's like, Dave's not going to laugh at that.
Right.
But Justin Stengel grabbed me like right as we were getting off.
That's
the
so
stage,
cool.
Threw it in my backpack.
That is so cool.
My buddy Cowhead. How much do you do the road?
A lot.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like Funny Bones improvs or just...
No, Red Band and I have been doing a thing where we do rock and roll clubs around the country. And I went on a theater tour opening for Jeff Ross. And I do theaters.
How fucking great was that?
Unbelievable.
Gotta be. You worked on The Burn.
Yeah.
How was that?
Yeah, I wrote it since it was a pilot. It was so much fun.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you good at those kind of jokes?
Yeah, that's what I do, yeah.
I'm horrible at those jokes.
I love those.
Are you good at, like, Twitter jokes?
Pretty good. Yeah, pretty good.
I suck. I can get a Twitter joke every, like, once a week I'll get a good one.
Yeah.
But it's very real. It happens in the moment. And
yeah.
And then it just...
I sort of have my niche on Twitter. Like, if somebody dies, that's really my go-to thing. That's always been my thing. So, like, sometimes I don't wake up until late in the afternoon. So, I'll wake up at, like, 12:30 or something, and I'll read my mentions. And it's like, dude, what do you got? Gary Coleman's a corpse. You know, people, like, already be waiting for it. And so one of the things I've been doing to combat, like, not being ready is, like, I'll start writing for somebody if I find out they like have like stage 5 cancer or something.
What a fucking great, what a great niche.
Right. So that by the time they die, I already have like 3 good ones in my draft.
Bruce Jenner's looking sick. Oh, that's fucking great.
Yeah, it's so much fun.
You're still really young though. How old are you?
29.
Guys, Tony Hinchcliffe. In case I forgot to mention it.
Yeah. Good to be here, Bert.
We did the Kill Tony, which is possibly one of my top 2 favorite live podcasts I've ever done in my entire life. I do not like live podcasts.
Thank you. Yeah.
I feel like live podcasts get you to perform.
Right.
Like you don't do what like this is. Like no audience would ever pay to see this.
Right.
Or maybe they would, but yeah. Doug loves movies and that.
Yeah.
2 favorite.
Thank
hands
you.
Down,
that's
no question.
Compliment.
Did Tom and I do it right or did we do it wrong?
No, totally. There's no wrong. That's what's crazy is that the format runs so smoothly and the people that I get on always love comedy in always different ways. So no matter who's on or how it goes, like it always ends up working out because truth is, you know, comedians have an opinion about things or something funny to say. I wanted to take, you know, at the on the lower level of the Comedy Store in the other room, there's always a comedian on stage, and there's always comedians in the back sort of walking through and walking around. They're always making funny calls with each other. And I'm like, if comedians watching comedy is funny, how do I get that onto something? So that's what made me create that show in that format.
The best is when, I wish you had like, I mean, obviously, I guess it probably wouldn't work that way, but like the best is when comedians get bitchy about other comedians. Like when someone's running the light,
right?
And you just hear, oh, really?
Yeah.
Someone's loving his act right now.
Right.
Like, can you, those are my favorite, is when you're backstage and someone's killing, but going a little long and really kind of drinking it in.
Right.
And like, you just, with other people, like, fucking enough.
Yeah. Well, that's why we tried to give a hard lesson in that on that show, because, you know, as you heard, that angry bear comes in like 5 seconds after they go too long. And that's sort of us trying to teach that lesson of, you know, get in, get out, do as good as you can do, but don't try to run the light.
So wait, how did you hook up with Jeff Ross?
Jeff, I used to host the open mic at the Comedy Store regularly.
How long have you been working? Let's start from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, because I would say me and you know each other casually, just through like the same way I kind of got to know Ari and Joey, and just like, it's like the same group of guys.
Yeah.
What, where did you start?
I started at the Comedy Store.
You started in LA.
Yeah.
Fucking gangster move.
Yeah.
I respect people who start in big cities.
Yeah.
I started in New York.
Right.
And I always looked at it like, you know what? If you're going to learn how to fucking swim, learn how to swim in a fucking riptide.
That's it. That's what Chappelle said. Chappelle said starting comedy at the Comedy Store is like learning how to dribble in the NBA. Which I thought was the best analogy. Totally. Oh, yeah.
It's the truth. And so did you have to do like work the door?
Yep. I worked the door for years.
Shut up.
Yeah. Yeah, for years. And it was so much fun, and I had so much fun. Just smoked and drank and learned and studied and watched and laughed.
Those are the best times. Yeah. So who was the big guys at the Comedy Store when you were going through there? Like, who's coming in and just killing it? I guess it must have been Joe and Carlos.
Well, actually, I got there just after that. I arrived, I think, a month or two after the big Joe Carlos explosion. So Joe wasn't there, and really Carlos wasn't there regularly yet either. So I'd gotten there just after that. So it was sort of a dark time. It was very bizarre, sort of empty there.
I really believe the Comedy Store fucked up on that whole...
Oh, yeah. Well,
they really picked the wrong team.
Yeah.
And I think that will, I think, sadly, that'll define them for a very long time.
Part of it, definitely for an era.
Yeah.
That'll definitely be like chapter 6 or 7 and whatever the book ends up being. And I think that I think that a lot of them would be the first to admit that mistake. I think there was I really do. I don't think Pauly Shore would say it himself, but I think just about everybody around him would that has to do with the store.
It's interesting in those moments who people choose.
Right.
You know, like I know that I had a big rift, and it's interesting to see people pick teams and then go, wow, like that's like, I've never asked anyone to pick teams on in anything. I've never been the kind of guy where I'm like, oh, if you like this guy, then I don't like you.
Right.
I'm not that kind of guy. And I never liked the clubs that did that. When they're like, oh, you work the improv, then you don't work. The improv's not like that. No place I've ever worked is like that.
Right.
But it's interesting to watch people pick teams and then go, fuck you.
Yeah, it's really bizarre, and to see why they do it and how and this and that. But yeah, that's a really interesting one. But who was killing when I got there? You know, it's the people, the Warriors. I mean, just the people that have been killing the whole time. Like Dom Irrera was there and killing. Yeah. Like I remember just being shocked to see Dom Irrera just casually rolling up there and doing that, which he's always done, and he completely evolves with the game. He's so funny. I guess Whitney had just shown up at the time.
Really?
That was interesting, watching Whitney really grow. And I guess
she what's she doing now?
I don't know. I really don't know.
She's got like a Chelsea Lately on E, right?
Not anymore. That's done.
She's got her sitcoms.
She's the executive producer of Two Broke Girls, but
then that's enough to fucking...
Oh, totally.
Yeah, I'd fucking hang my hat on that.
That's it. That's the name of the game.
She had Whitney, and that's where everyone, I think, was introduced to D'Elia.
Right.
And then D'Elia.
Yeah.
D'Elia is a really great actor.
Yeah.
He's a guy that I think he'll. He's like Al Madrigal. He's going to work forever.
Yeah, definitely.
And Al Madrigal's worked fucking so much.
Oh, and that's the other one. I mean, he was there when I got there, and I just couldn't believe that a guy could just walk up to a mic and a mic stand and stand there without moving around, without energy, without anything, just with his words. Just I sat there, just like a. I don't know what to compare it to, but it just blew my mind to shreds. You know, I've always loved stand up, but to get to the Comedy Store and get to see guys that are just so refined and well worked, and he really blew my mind.
He's fucking.
I mean, that was like a big inspiration for me because.
So wait, who? Okay, and I'll put it. I don't know if you've ever listened to this podcast, but I fucking talk more than anyone. I got into stand-up because Rolling Stone wrote an article about me. That's how I got into it. I had no confidence. I told a couple people I wanted to be a comic. They all laughed at me and told me I was a fucking idiot. And I would have never done it had that. What was the deciding factor that you decided? Like, what was the thing where you're like, I'm going to give this a fucking shot?
I wanted to do it forever. And I was procrastinating for years. I started at 22, but I had procrastinated for years before that. And, you know, I was just sitting outside of a coffee shop for months leading into it, and I actually made friends.
so you were already hanging out at coffee shops before?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I had everything else locked down.
I was in my sweatshirt, I had my New Balance shoes on, and I'm just sitting there going, I'm wearing the outfit.
Right. Everything fits. I've had 5 cups of coffee. No, but I actually ended up meeting, crazy enough, I just moved to L.A. So
from
it's
where?
Like
Youngstown, Ohio. That's right. Yeah. I knew you and Brian are both Ohio guys. Mm-hmm. And Maurice Claret.
Yes, exactly. He's from Youngstown, too.
Yeah.
And we went to Youngstown and Columbus together, basically with Jim Tressel. Like, it was like sort of like a package deal.
There was a boy band called the Youngstown.
I remember that.
One of those guys was a PA on one of my TV shows.
Really?
One of the boy band stars.
Wow.
And he came out. He was a fucking stud. And he was, I'm not going to say he was slaughtering pussy. I'm sure he had a girlfriend that he loved. Mm-hmm. But he was like, I remember one time we were going, it was on... It was on Fresh Baked Video Games. Mm-hmm. He was a PA, and he was taking me out. We were going diving with sharks that day. I was. And he was on the thing. He was like, you know, I used to be famous. I was like, really? And he was like, I was in a really famous boy band, and it kind of just exploded. And now I'm out here just trying to make it work. Wish I'd known that guy's name. You heard of them?
Yeah, totally. They were big in Youngstown. I mean, they're called Youngstowns. And not much is going on in Youngstown. So if a boy band named after the city makes it, everybody finds out. I don't even think they were from Youngstown. I think they were just called Youngstown. I'm not positive about that. But I think they just called themselves Youngstown. So they were huge.
He was a stud. Yeah. So you moved from Youngstown to
LA, and then I was just procrastinating for months, just saying that I wanted to do it. I had never been to a stand-up comedy club, even a live stand-up comedy club at all, until the day that I finally showed up to do the open mic at the Comedy Store.
Holy shit. So you had, I mean, I guess I'd been to stand-up shows. We had a stand-up club in Tallahassee, and I've been to a couple. Mm-hmm. And I did an open mic in Tallahassee, one, and then got off for a morning show, and I was like, oh, I can do this, so I moved to New York. Mm-hmm. But you had never... I'd never seen real stand-up until I moved to New York, technically.
Yeah, right. No, the thing was is that I knew I was going to do it forever.
Yeah.
So I knew that when I started, it was... I wanted to listen to every Pink Floyd song before. I wanted to watch every movie that I was going to see, and I'm glad that I did. Like, it was a weird sort of self-aware procrastination meets self-teaching college type of thing, because I was really chilling out, just relaxing a lot. I was basically like a bum living on my brother's couch the first few months that I got here. And then sitting outside of that coffee shop, I actually made friends with Shia LaBeouf's dad. Strangely enough, like, we were lived around the corner from each other, so we shared the same mutual coffee shop. Made friends with him, and he ended the procrastination by saying, you know, it's going to take years before you get as good as you want to be anyway, so you might as well start now. And he really pushed me, told me to go to the Comedy Store, and he just talked me out of my head game that I was in. And there you go. I prepared for a month for my first 3 minutes to show up to the Comedy Store, a whole month just for 3 minutes. And then when I finally got picked, that first time that I showed up to the Comedy Store, I got on the list, I got picked, and then I was so excited that I literally blanked out and forgot the 3 minutes that I had prepared a month for. I couldn't even think of the topic.
Really?
Because I've never been that excited since. I've never was that excited before. But I just knew that that was the set that I was going to be talking about you know, even on a, maybe even on a podcast 7 years later. But it was hitting me like, whoa, I'm in the moment on a story that I'm going to be telling. Like, this is my first set. So I blanked out, which is really bizarre. And so, but what ended up happening, though, which is sort of interesting, is that my comedy style organically came through in that set because I like being in the moment and sort of just like off the cuff.
Yeah.
And I was literally just talking about how I had prepared for a month for this and I had forgotten the 3 minutes, you know, beat. No, seriously, like I really forgot.
So much more interesting
laughs
than seeing someone prepare right 3 minutes.
Yes. Yeah, so it actually stood out of the 15 open micers and there was a crowd there. It really stood out of the pack. And it wasn't long after that that they offered me a job and that I was on the lineups regularly. And
so how does that work? Do they go like, do they're like, because like in New York, you had to beg for a job. Like right, when I had to beg for a job at the Boston Comedy Club.
Yeah.
And be like, oh, fucking, I was a pain in the ass to this guy, Louis Schaefer. Mm-hmm. And then finally it was like, all right, you can work the door. And if you bring in people, 25 people a night, if there's still a crowd after Godfrey goes on, I'll let you go up.
Oh, that's so cool. I love Godfrey.
Yeah, he was a beast to follow. And then finally Godfrey's just like, because I was really good at barking. I would bring mm-hmm in a ton of fucking people. Mm-hmm. So finally Godfrey was just like, go up before me and then Godfrey would do like an hour.
That's great.
He was fucking a monster. So they call you up and they're like who calls you up? Like Tommy?
Yeah.
And he's like,
what happens is I sort of asked around because I saw the guys working the door there knowing, and I found out quickly, either just before I got there or after, that the history is that comedians work there and this and that. So I started asking those door guys. What I would actually do is, a fun fact, is I would bring pre-rolled joints to make friends with the door guys.
So fucking smart.
So that they would smoke with me. And then I could go, so how did you get a job? And then I took all 8 door guys' answers and put them together to make my own little recipe for how I was going to do it. What I learned a lot was that the consensus was that Tommy gets irritated. Don't ask Tommy. Just let him see you, but look cool. You know, just smile and be polite, but don't be annoying. Say hello. Say thank you after your spot, but don't say how much you love the club. You know, there's like a fine line.
Yeah.
And I really worked that for a few weeks or a couple months. I'm not sure exactly how long it took, but it worked out, man. It worked out. And I knew that if I could get that job at the Comedy Store that I could turn it into the beginning of something. Because I sort of like that old club weird history. I like that Sunset Strip.
I told you the other night when we were hanging out, I was like, probably my biggest mistake is not being young and coming here and going like, oh, I'm going to get into the Comedy Store. Because it's fun as fuck. Like hanging out there outdoors is so much fun.
Yeah.
I had a blast.
Yeah, and it's
I literally was like, going around from people I hadn't seen in forever, including Tripoli, who's like, I would say, a good friend of mine. I haven't seen him in forever. And we're just and it was like, it's a fucking blast. It's a scene.
Yeah.
I would probably be, had I started working there, I would not be married. I know that for a fact. Right. I would not have kids. I probably wouldn't have a job. I'd still be doing, I'd be working there. I'd be hanging out there a lot. I probably would have gotten sober at some point. Mm-hmm.
Something would have had to give.
Yeah, but it's such a cool scene.
Yeah, it's really fun, and it's like that all year round due to the weather. How long were you in New York for?
I was in New York for, I got there in like 97, I think, and I had a kid in 94 or 2004, so I started, and I think I started a TV show in 2000, mm-hmm. So I was there for 3 years straight, probably, and then then back and forth for 2 years, and then I just stopped going back. Mm-hmm. Like there was no point for me to go back. The one thing that happened is I passed at the Cellar, and I was like, fuck. I was like, I had a TV show at the time, but I was like, man, I could easily come back here and start working the Cellar and be a New York regular. Like I love that.
Yeah, the Cellar's great. That's another place where I've only been there once or twice. It was in the same week. That was a year or two ago. And that's the same feeling that I got when I first got to the store. Just sitting there watching the show. I mean, it was just like, it was me seeing something that I wanted again. Like, it was like seeing a trophy or, you know, just something that I really wanted to be part of and accomplish, which I haven't, you know, I didn't get to do a spot or anything. I mean, that, but that's what I love is how hard it is, the challenge, the fact that, oh, you got to submit a tape and she's really picky and this and that. I love that. That's the kind of challenge that really excites me.
Yeah. I like the, the passing a club gives me anxiety.
Yeah.
Like, I've said it, but I've told the story before, but, like, when Tommy wanted, when Ahmed and Steve Byrne and Mike Young and Brett all wanted me to start working at the store when I just had Isla. So probably like 7 years ago, maybe less than that, maybe like six years ago. Mm-hmm. They were like, we want you to start working at the store. You should be working there. And they talked to Tommy, and Tommy called and was like, here's a deal. You got to, like, you know, you got to do 2 minutes or 3 minutes in front of Mitzi. And I'd done it once before in front of Louie. With Louie Anderson had introduced me and was like, he's one of the funniest guys I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah.
You need to see him. You need to pass him. And she was like, and Louie got me right up, and I did a set. And it was you know, it was mediocre. She didn't pass me. And then Tommy was like, we need you to pass me. And I was already headlining, you know, like fucking 45 weeks
right.
a year.
Right.
And I was like, oh, I was just doing it to hang out. I wasn't really
right.
doing it.
Right.
Like, I'd do sets if I was there, and I was going to be cool with that, but I was like, it's not.
Yeah,
I'm not.
It's two different worlds. And you know, yeah, with you already headlining and stuff, it could probably, I mean, at least the first couple months could really only probably do harm, because the room is so bizarre and weird and hard that if you're not, that you have to make adjustments and call, like, audibles in the moment, because it's not like a showroom that's friendly for the comedians. It's a challenge. I mean, there's a window to the Sunset Strip next to the stage. It's a dark pit. You're following great comedians. The comedian that just killed gave you a great intro saying you're gonna kill. Like, there's so many weird little pressure situations that make it a little bit harder than an average room. So I could see how, like, that wouldn't be that beneficial if you're already headlining everywhere, how it could possibly even hurt. Maybe confidence, you know, or something like that.
Yeah, I like those. I like that energy, though. I like that off. I like that. I mean, I call it a late Sunday show. Mm-hmm. Like, just that fucking weird energy where no one's paid. And you don't get them anymore. This sounds arrogant as shit. But you don't get them. I don't get them anymore. Mm-hmm. I get, you know, usually every show's a special event or people are paying.
Right.
But, man, those Sunday shows, I loved them because on the road, like in the clubs I do, like, I normally worked Funny Bones and Improvs.
Yeah.
And so Funny Bones predominantly on your Sunday show is going to be 80% black.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that fucking.
Yeah.
I love performing for black people.
Me too.
I love it more than white people.
Yep.
There's a reward that you'll never get from a white audience.
Totally.
A white audience does
towels swinging over their head.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just fucking people standing up, getting you a drink and walking it on stage.
Yep.
And literally girls. Like, when you get. It's so interesting. I wonder if there's an equivalent to this in every occupation, but the payoff for a black when you turn a black audience and you get them to go, oh, we fucking love this guy. I don't know if
you can do anything at that point. You can do anything. I had a show at a black club last week, and. You know,
For you, a black club is like, you're really white looking.
Yeah. Yeah. And I talk about that and they love it. You know what I mean? Like, they're like, okay, he's owning who he is. So they can get on board with it. Whereas, you know, the classic mistake that I've seen a few of my white friends make is they try to be a little bit black. Like, they'll start to talk a little bit different. And that's the last thing you want to do, because they can feel that. They can feel that phoniness, and it never goes that well.
Oh, fucking never! When you're like,
right?
Well, my misstep was always talking about hip hop, because I'm a real big fan of hip hop, and I always thought I'd connect that way. But then you start talking about hip hop, and you realize not all black people are obsessed with hip hop,
right?
Just like not all white people are obsessed with music in general.
Right.
It's like you assume. I was looking at World Star Hip Hop today.
Yeah,
have you ever watched? Look at World Star Hip Hop.
It's like basically my homepage. I just love it. That's entertainment for me.
Oh, yeah. There were these two white guys in a fight with a black guy in San Diego. Did you see this one?
No.
And this old player, like this old 50-year-old black guy, starts beating them up with a cane. Oh, it's so fucking great. I've never wanted to punch a white guy more in my life. Mm-hmm. Come on, motherfucker. Like they were doing Donnell's impression of white people.
Yeah.
All right, motherfucker. I was like, oh my God, I was about to lose my shit.
That's so great.
So wait, so that's how you met Jeff Ross, was through the store?
Yeah, when I was hosting there, I would do this thing where I'd host the 40 comic open mic and this and that, and I'd make fun of comedians if they didn't do well. Like, I'd be like, oh, Bobby, you know, just whatever they were dressed like.
Or, yeah.
Which happens a lot, comedians not doing well once every 3 minutes nonstop throughout a night. And I sort of got a reputation for being good at making fun of people, and it wasn't long after that Jeff came to me like, hey, I heard you like making fun of people. My response was something like, yeah, that's what I love the most. And then so we started working together immediately. He's like, hey, I'm roasting Quentin Tarantino at the Friars Club this month. If you have any jokes, I'd love to check them out. And Quentin Tarantino is like my favorite anything. So
wait, did something like that, do you get like excited and you sit down with a pen and paper and you're like, fucking, it just starts pouring out.
More than any point up until that point, I was finally doing what I wanted to be doing. Like,
really?
It was, oh my God, it was like handing LeBron a basketball.
Do you remember some of your jokes?
I remember my favorite one that ended up nobody could say it because it was just so mean. But, they had to delay. The original roast was scheduled for like October or something like that, but then they had to delay it until February because right before the roast, like a week before, Quentin's editor passed away in Runyon Canyon. You remember that? Sally Mankey, she had done all of his films. She had heat stroke and passed away.
Are you fucking shitting me?
Yeah, no. So they had to delay the roast. So my joke for the second one, right, this goes back full circle to my death jokes. So my updated joke for the second roast was, you know, they had to reschedule this roast because, unfortunately, you know, Quentin Tarantino's editor died, which is really shocking because I saw Kill Bill and I thought she died in 2001, which was before that movie because it's 5 hours long. Anyway, I love that because I'm a real movie nerd and I love Kill Bill. I mean, that's even sort of how Kill Tony, like the name of it.
I was wondering if that had because I was like, Kill Tony. And I was like, oh, I mean, we must be roasting Tony. And then I realized, oh, no, that's just I saw The Samurai Sword and I was like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. A bit of a theme.
So wait, that's crazy. One of my buddies wrote on one of the roasts. I forget which one.
One of the recent ones?
Yeah. It was one of the ones, like, you had to he said the whole process was you submit blankly. Like, you don't have a name on your submission.
Right.
And they pick the submissions they like so that there's no nepotism.
Right.
Because they just want the best jokes. Mm-hmm. John Moore, do you know him?
No.
John Moore, he's a big guy. He's also like a... He's a comedy... He's been on my podcast. He's a comedy... I would say he's a comedy nerd who moonlights writing on roasts, but really produces television. Mm-hmm. Like, he's an executive producer. He does Joe Schmo. He does... he's got a new show that's coming out that's kind of like under wraps. But he does big TV shows. He is a full-blown executive producer, but...
But he has that roast muscle.
But he loves fucking writing for roasts. So he submits for the roasts and then takes a pay cut and writes on the roasts.
Right. That's so cool.
It's
an amazing thing. Some of the funniest comedians I know are like, I could never do that. But it's all different muscles, you know. I can't be high energy. And you know, there's certain things that I can't do, but that's one thing that I can. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Whereas it's just all different muscles and techniques. It's like some MMA fighters are jiu-jitsu and some are wrestling. But when you have that roast neck, you definitely like wear it on your sleeve, you know. And then this way, when you'll always notice them at comedy clubs because there'll be a circle of comedians with one guy in the middle being made fun of, you know, and he wears a weird jacket or a weird pair of shoes or just whatever it is. But there's some guys like me that can't not make fun of someone when they see something goofy. Like, I need that vent.
Do you dig Tosh's stuff?
I only know him from his TV show, and I can't watch it because I always wanted to do a TV show like that before it came out. So
yeah.
I just watch it, and I get super jealous. I have a weird thing with Tosh where it's like I was telling people for a couple years before that show came out. I'm like, yeah, I just want to. I didn't even know you had to be like established or have a fan base to get on a TV show when I first got here. I'm like, I'm going to have a TV show where it's just me standing in front of internet clips, and it's going to kill. So I can't even watch that show.
And you pitched it to Tosh's EP. He's like, right. I was so funny that Fresh Baked Video Games show I was telling you about. Mm-hmm. The executive producer is the executive producer of Tosh.0. Mm-hmm. I can't remember his name right now, but he is the executive producer of that. But I remember being in his office and him like, "What do you think of Daniel Tosh?" And I was like, "He's great." I just worked with him. I'd worked with him when George was born. I was like, he's great. I love him, and he's one of my favorite comics. And he's like, I think there's a show for him. And I was like, yeah, definitely. He's like, I just don't know what it is. And they did. He must have tried like 8 pilots with Tosh.
Wow.
And then finally got the one. Tosh has got an interesting career. I never saw him doubt himself. Mm-hmm. He just was one of those people that was like, I'm too talented not to succeed.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas everyone else was like, would beat themselves up if things didn't go, Tosh kind of was like, meh, who gives a fuck? Mm-hmm. I remember him laughing one time as I was going on stage. I was featuring for him, and he was like, it's interesting. You have more credits than me, and you're the feature. And I was mm-hmm. like, yeah. I was like, yeah, that is fucking interesting. And then I got depressed. I was like, I guess I'm going to drink tonight. But yeah, Tosh, I've always dug. What would you be your TV show, do you think?
If I had one?
Like, yeah, what would you like to do? I had this conversation the other night at the Comedy Store with Mo Mandel and Tom Segura.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, you're so lucky, you know, that you got a TV show. TV shows it's not impossible to get a TV show. You just got to do something you want to do. Because
right.
if you do something you want to do, you'll be good at it.
Right.
It's like, we all love stand-up. Mm-hmm. That's why we're good at it. Because mm-hmm. we love it. We're obsessed with it. People assume that TV is going to be different, that you need to just get it, take a job. When you can do stuff you love doing. I mean, I absolutely love my TV show.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I'm passionate about it. I get up, I Google research it. I pitch ideas just like I'm one of the APs to myself, I guess. I'm pretty much, you know, but...
One idea that I've been throwing around and trying to work on the logistics to is basically a 12-hour long daily TV show. It would sort of be like the Truman Show meets stand-up comedy.
Yeah.
Where I just have like cameras, maybe one on my shoulder and one on my waist that points at me. And it just sort of goes through my daily life between, you know, 1 p.m. and 1 p.m.
That would be fascinating.
And it would only be on the internet. I guess I don't know what exactly my TV show would be. I'm working on another one that's sort of like Louis meets door guy at a comedy club. Like, instead of showing a successful comedian, showing like that struggle, because there's really a lot of crazy things that happen. And, you know, like when you meet these characters for the first time, you know, you're working the door and you see a Marc Maron and he's just like, hey, what's up, punk? And you know what I mean? Like all these characters and just... all the different things that happen. I think that there's something interesting in that. But as far as like a regular TV show, I'm not really sure. It's sort of there's a lot of things that I like. I mean, you really get to have fun. That's something else.
I'm well aware of the blessing that's been bestowed on me. I realize also it's going to go away one day. I'm well aware of that. Like, that's one of the other things about TV is that you got to go. There is a shelf life to it. You can't do it forever. I will do it for 15 years. If you want to do it for 15 years, I'm there. Mm-hmm. I'll totally be an old man jumping out off of fucking bridges, and mm-hmm. I love it. But yeah, I mean, I remember my first TV show got canceled, and I was like, what the fuck? And then Mark Cronin was like, they all get canceled, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, there's not one show. Seinfeld gets gone. Fucking Friends is gone.
Yep.
I mean, and then look back and go, I barely remember Friends.
Right.
Like, that was like the biggest show ever.
Yeah.
And now you look at it and you're like, 2 1/2 Men, one day will be gone. Well, not that I have fucking another, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, I always think if you can find out what you're passionate about, you can easily do a TV show. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, if you're passionate about roast jokes, you can find a way. Like, you know, The Burn is really a great fucking show. Is it done?
I'm not sure exactly what they're doing with it. I think it might be transforming to another type of a I'm not sure. I'm not positive. It's a it's in a weird place right now.
Comedy Central is an interesting place because they don't necessarily. I mean, they are a destination channel, so it's like whatever they decide to throw up, you know.
Right.
You know. Well, I like Workaholics is a great show.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a fan of that since day one, and you know, Adam was a door guy at the Improv.
Yeah.
And it's so funny. I ran into him in New Orleans, and obviously he's got like the hit show. I'm with my whole crew for Trip Flip, and I see him. And I recognize them, and I wave hi, and then they come up, and just like you said, like Marin or whatever, and I don't remember distinctly how I carried myself ever when I'm at the club. I'm usually drunk, but he's just sitting there, and he's like, I can't believe I'm having beers with Bert Kreischer. And I was like, you're the one with the hip fucking show.
Right.
I'm like, because it's, you know, because he just worked at the door, and he'd see the guys come in, like the guys that he started, that he was like, oh, fuck, you know? Do you think you'll now you and Brian are on the road, like how often?
Pretty often. Usually at least twice a month, something like that.
Holy
once or
shit.
Twice a month on average, yeah.
That's fucking...
Yeah, we're going to San Diego at the end of February and then Seattle and Portland in March, so it's all happening.
That's fucking insane.
We just did Texas a few weeks ago.
And so you're basically circumnavigating the club system. You're either doing big theaters or rock clubs.
True. It's unbelievable, but I really almost never get a chance to do an actual comedy club.
That's going to be fascinating the way that transforms your voice.
Yeah.
In like 10 years, the way you, because you'll have more of a stand-up style like Stanhope or like Joe, because that's where their voices are. Real. I mean, Joe formed his in the club, and he still always goes back to club, but he's, you know, he's doing theater so much now. And you've toured with Joe too.
Oh yeah.
That's got to be fucking funny shit.
The most fun. It's insane.
I'm so jealous. I don't wish that I wasn't working as much as I am, but I wish I had time off to go do a date with him and do the UFC.
It's unbelievable. Have you done that before?
No.
Oh, see, I felt like guilty. I felt like I was in like the wrong place, even though I knew that was my chair right behind him in front of the front row. Like, there's people that paid God only knows how much to sit in the front row of this huge arena. But there's something about sitting in front of them that even though I walked in with Joe, I'm just like, am I in the right spot? Because watching guys actually battle each other, like fist and technique and man battle, it's like gladiator stuff. And to see it live, I mean, it's just a whole nother... It's a whole nother thing than what translates to TV.
I mean,
those punches are hard. And when you hear them with your actual ears instead of through the speaker of a television, it's unbelievable.
Really?
Oh, it's unbelievable. And it's so much louder and crazier. And the guys are so much faster and stronger than translates to TV as well, in my opinion. Yeah.
Really?
Oh, yeah. It's really something. It's really something else. Now, the catch is since that was my first UFC event, I'm basically never going to be able to go watch UFC again unless I'm with Rogan because I was so close. I mean, it was just unbelievable. So much fun.
It's got to be a fucking blast.
Yeah.
I talked to Joey about it, and Joey and Ari and those guys, they just...
Oh, yeah.
And I've been a fan of UFC since, you know, it's like when you're my age, it started... I mean, I remember when it started and you get it on pay-per-view in college and the Gracies ran shit.
Yep. I was
Tank
watching
Abbott.
It back then.
How old are you?
I'm 29.
God, yeah. You're a fucking baby.
But I was watching Tank Abbott and Gracie Shamrock and all that. So it all to culminate to being with Rogan and just, you know, being friends with him and eating lunch with him and Dana White before going to the event. And it's just like crazy.
So wait, I carry myself in one of two ways. I either shut down or I talk too much.
I'm a shutdown guy. I shut down all the way.
Really?
Oh, I mean, like, I will not say a word. So much so that if I do say anything, like, I'll be too quiet. If, you know, like, when the moment finally comes, like, I'll just be like, oh, yeah, that's so true. And then everybody's like, what? What'd you say, kid? Because they sort of, at that point, they're, like, interested. They're like, what's the quiet guy saying finally? Oh, nothing. Forget it. You know?
Do you think you'd enjoy, the totally separate question, do you think you'd enjoy writing on a sitcom?
doesn't really seem like my bag right now. I just can't get into it. You know, I'm lucky enough to have a little team of an agent and a manager that the poor guys just love annoying me for that, because I guess that's probably the best way for us all to make money right now.
It's such a great, because there are guys like you who are funny, who are funny and smart and funny and can translate their funny. Their funny doesn't need to be like me taking my shirt off. Like, I'm never going to fucking, despite the fact that I could easily write on any sitcom or I could write for a TV show, I'm never getting those offers. I submitted a long time ago for David Spade's Hollywood show, and my submission went great, but then I got a TV show.
Right.
And so they're like, well, why would we ever fucking put you on a writer when you can just book TV shows and make, you know.
Right.
So, but I always wish I could do something like that.
There's something about it that just doesn't excite me that much. I don't know what it is, and I know I could do it, but it just seems like not enough of a challenge. It seems too easy to come up with a format out of thin air or even something that's already been built. I like the smaller but bigger, like a joke challenge. Like, hey, this just happened. What do you got?
Yeah.
I like disappearing for 10 minutes with a cup of coffee and my little vapor cigarette and then reappearing with, here you go, and slide them just the joke on the subject rather than a big, I don't know, I just can't get into sitcoms. What I love more than anything is there's a part in Man on the Moon where Danny DeVito's playing Andy Kaufman's manager, George Shapiro. And way back then, I mean, in the mid-70s or whenever that was, or 80s, he goes, Andy, we got a big deal for you. You're going to be on a sitcom. And Andy, even all the way back then, is like, a sitcom? Why would you put me in this position? I don't want to be on a sitcom, all that canned laughter, and the writing's always bad, and it's always cheesy. And I really feel the same way. I think he was way ahead of the curve, you know what I mean?
Like, well, it's even, I mean, still, like, if you said to me, I could have been in Taxi. Taxi was funny as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, when, Jim Ignatowski was the greatest character maybe ever. I remember laughing so hard, my parents laughing at him.
Was that DeVito?
No, that was Christopher Lloyd.
Oh, yeah.
Christopher Lloyd?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was Christopher Lloyd. I mean, I remember him, I forget the joke, but it's, they're, fucking, what's his name? Angela, that guy, Tony Danza.
Oh, yeah,
Danza is waiting for a call from the Dolphins or something, and they make the phone call, and Jim answers, and he goes, hello, a dolphin? There's a dolphin on the phone? I forget the joke, but I remember laughing so fucking hard at that show.
Yeah.
It was so great. And then, of course, that's the first three seasons. Then it gets to this place where they're introducing new characters because everyone's doing movies.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I was a big fan of Andy Kaufman's when no one was a big fan of his. When I was a young comic in New York, and you'd hear about it from another comic, and then you'd be like, tell me, like, and then you just, like, drink it in. Like, I remember Dimitri Martin introduced me to him, and I was like, fuck. And then me and my buddy Eddie just obsessed about him. Introduced me to Andy Kaufman. Like,
Dimitri Martin introduced? Oh.
Introduced me to the...
Gotcha.
Like, have you ever seen...
Right.
This is back before the internet.
Yeah.
When I started the internet was there, but you had to go to the Museum of Television and Radio.
Wow.
And you could Google... You could go in there and watch the clips they had. Wow. So you'd go there during the afternoon and just watch old clips of everything.
Yeah.
And now it's all on our fingertips. It's so amazing.
Right. But that's actually how, like, I got into comedy was I think I was a freshman in high school. That movie came out, Man on the Moon.
Really?
And it was over from there. All of a sudden, everything started making sense because I was always really goofy and funny, like in class. I was always in trouble, not because I was like a bully or because I would touch people.
Did you play sports?
Yeah, I was a wrestler.
You were a wrestler?
Yeah.
Shut the fuck up. I'm grabbing a soda. Keep talking. You were a wrestler?
Yeah, and I'm okay. Thank you, though. But, Any sport with a weight class is always beneficial for a little guy like me. So I had fun with it.
So wait, do you now watch UFC like a wrestler?
Pretty much, yeah.
Shut the fuck up.
Yeah. When I get a chance, I watch it. I watched that. I watched the Silva match where he broke his leg.
Yeah.
I was at my my girlfriend's parents' house in Houston, and they were all asleep, and we downloaded the feed for it, and so when that happened, I had to be quiet. That was like a really tough position because her parents' bedroom was next door. It was like 1 a.m. or something like that. So when that happened, I'm just like biting down on a pillow, just like, oh my God.
Which I'm sure sounds like you're fucking.
Right.
Oh my God. It's broken. It's broken. Son of a bitch. How can that happen?
Look how big and black and bended this thing is.
She's just like, oh my God. So do you ever like think of doing jiu-jitsu?
I thought about it a lot, yeah.
You should do it.
Yeah, I should.
I went over to Eddie Bravo, mm-hmm. to 10th Planet. Joey, me, and Duncan casually had a conversation about starting a fight club in my backyard. Very casually. Joey said, I'll go if you go. So I said, I'll go if you go. And then Duncan said, you guys are going? I'll go. And so then I went and scouted it. And Joey's like, just tell me when, I'm showing up. And so I go and I talk to Eddie, and Eddie was very, I think Eddie had a black eye that day. And he was like, and I was like, what happened to your eye? And he's like, well, it's part of training. You know, that's part of the thing. You know, you're gonna get some black eyes.
Wow.
You're gonna bump. You're gonna get some bumps. And I was like, in my head, all I could think was, I'm on TV.
Yeah.
Like, I can't have a black eye. I can't show up to work with a black eye.
Right.
They'll fucking knock a tooth out.
Yeah.
And then I was getting really bad anxiety about it. Mm-hmm. And I told Joey, and Joey's like, dog, we're just not going to fucking go. I was like, really? He's like, yeah, we don't need that shit. Yeah, we'll have coffee every day. Well, fucking Joey's one of the most fascinating fucking guys. What was your introduction to Joey?
Oh, my God. I was at an Ice House Chronicles, and I had heard of the mystique, the legacy of Joey Diaz. Like, I had heard a little bit. And I remember being at the Ice House Chronicles, which is a podcast where, you know, like 6 or 7 people just sit around and sort of shoot the shit. And I remember being there, and there was an empty chair. And there was a bunch of us sitting there, and it's going, like, nothing really crazy is happening. And I remember Joey Diaz coming in, so I already had headphones on. You don't really get to say hi to somebody in that situation. And I remember him just sitting there, not really saying much. Like, Red Band said, hey Diaz, what's going on? Hello. But he just sits there, and he has his headphones around his neck, not on his ears yet. And it took like 4 or 5 minutes until whatever the conversation was finally interesting enough that he throws on his headphones and goes, I'll tell you right now. And he's just in it. And from then on, I've just been dying. No matter what he says.
Yeah.
Like, he could try to get serious, and I just can't help but to laugh at everything he says. He's the funniest guy to me.
I've got the greatest introduction ever to Joey Diaz. Mm-hmm. No questions asked.
Yeah.
The best. It's online, and it is. And anyone who doesn't know it that is listening to this podcast, if you've never heard it, you got it. I was literally sitting there, and it was Lice House Chronicles. I sit down, and it's me, Ren Azizi, Joey, and I can't remember. I think that Ari might have been there. I think. And Joey just sits down, and the first words he says to me were, dog, you ever break into a chick's house on a quaalude and eat her pussy?
Ah.
Lucy Snorbush. That was how I met him, was him telling me that.
Wow.
And I could not stop fucking laughing. That's maybe the top five I've hardest ever laughed in my life.
Right.
Because all I could, and I was pretty fucked up, but I was like, all I could picture was that, all I could think to myself was that he thought that was in the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, asking that very casually. Mm-hmm. Have you ever done that? And I'm like,
right.
No one's done that. No, absolutely no one's done that. And then he said her name, and I remember Ren Azizi fucking lost his mind.
Yeah.
And was like, there's no one named that, Joey. There's no one named that. And he's like, she's on Facebook, dog. That's how I fucking met Joey. One of the fucking...
She's on Facebook.
She's on Facebook, dog.
Oh, my God.
He's one of the fascinating...
Oh, totally. Somebody asked me last night who my favorite 5 stand-up comedians alive right now to watch are. And he
good
was,
question.
And he was on that list.
Wait, who's your top 5?
It was tough, and I'm still not sure if it's the exact, you know, lockdown, but my ballpark that came to my mind was Chappelle,
yeah.
Louis, Bill Burr, Joey Diaz, and Brody Stevens. gave Brody the wild card based on his originality.
Based on a good night of Brody, it's hard to top.
Exactly. Like when he's on, it's a slaughter fest.
Ari and I saw him at UCB one night, absolutely murder with no material.
Right.
Just seamless.
Yep.
Want to know something crazy? One of my neighbors was riding his bike down the street the other day with his daughter. He rides his daughter with his daughter on the handlebars, and he's riding back. And as he gets closer, he's got an Enjoy It shirt on.
Ah.
I fucking lost my shit.
I love it.
I didn't even... I was like, you got a Brody shirt on. He was like, I've known Brody forever.
Yeah. That's the show that I want to write on, by the way.
Brody's?
I think I was very close to getting on that. They sort of went with the short staff. But that's something I'm very interested in. Like, I'd have tons of ideas for that type of thing. Putting Brody in an interesting situation and watching him work his way out of it or into it.
He really does have a fucking capacity to get to make something very casual into something very interesting.
Oh yeah,
And it's the way. I think it is genuinely the way his brain works. You know, your brain, I think, correct me if you disagree, but I think the second you decide to be a comic, your brain changes molecular mechanics.
Totally.
Like, it changes entirely in the way, like, everyone goes, oh, is everything a joke to you? Literally everything becomes a joke to you.
Yeah.
And you cannot find anything serious. Like, my grandmother's funeral, I'm thinking, people go through this. Yeah. What is the thing that's funny?
Mm-hmm.
And especially, like, I've changed a tad bit in that I used to try to make light of the worst. Mm-hmm. So, like, I wish that liberal bloggers understood that part of the challenge for a comic is to take the darkest mm-hmm. and make fun of it and make people laugh at things you wouldn't normally laugh at.
Right.
Well, I guess liberal bloggers believe that, you know, just like, all comedy should be is like very observational about socks and
right
and like parking
right, and they don't realize that there's a huge group of people that will literally thank you and be like, you know, thanks for, you know, there's a whole group of people that need a joke on a tough subject to be able to cope with it.
Yeah.
You know, like when the Boston thing happened, I can't remember what I said, but it was a decent one. But I had a lot of feedback, and not how you would think, where it's like, how too soon, how dare you? But it was like, I live in Boston, first time I've smiled all day, thank you. And, you know, like, that's priceless.
Best 9/11 joke ever, Colin Quinn. Have you heard it?
Wait, what was it?
It was like the day after.
I think I have. And then I'm going to tell you another one from Sarah Silverman after this.
Colin Quinn's was, I guess, you know, I'm going to fuck it up. You know, I'm going to fuck it up.
All right.
The time, you know, you can tell you've gotten past 9/11 by how soon after the event you masturbated. For me, it was in between when Tower 1 and Tower 2 fell. I mean, it's a horrible tragedy. That is, no one can deny that. That joke, it is American. That is American sense of humor at its best.
Totally.
Shock. It is shocking. It is entertaining. It is in your face.
Misdirect. You don't see that one coming.
What was Sarah Silverman's?
Sarah's is, you know, and you got to picture her adorable style. Again, I won't do this justice either, but, you know, she's like, you know, 9/11 was really, really hard on me, guys, because that was the day that Starbucks ended the pumpkin spice latte. Just completely off the subject.
Jeff Ross had a joke, like, literally the week of, and he goes, I'd like to, I wrote this poem on September 11th, mm-hmm. 1986. I'd like to... Yeah. Read it. You're like, just, there's so many. Like,
well, we actually did one on The Burn. My favorite joke that ever was on The Burn was actually, we had an episode that aired on 9/11, like the 10-year anniversary or something like that. So we made a special, like, act 2 or act 3 of that show was dedicated to 9/11.
Really?
Just a run of jokes. And one of my favorite parts, which I guess you have to see the whole thing together to really appreciate it, but one of my favorite parts was, you know, he gets really serious. It's almost like he's giving a speech, and he's talking about how, you know, I walked outside. I remember being in New York when it happened. And he was in New York when it happened. But he's like, I was in New York, and I remember looking down at my bran muffin covered in the ashes of buildings and human beings, and I thought to myself, is it okay to eat this?
That's the way a comic's brain works, though.
Right.
And I don't think, I you know, like, I'm obsessed right now with the blog Jezebel. You ever read that? You know, Moshe Kasher didn't turn me on to it. I think he is not a big fan of it, but it's a very liberal, feminist, I think feminist kind of like, liberal blog, and oddly enough, I don't disagree with everything they say. Okay. It's when they take things to the 10th degree, mm-hmm. where they say, when you don't see the other side of it. It's like someone possibly getting upset about rape jokes. Well, I here's what bothers me, and I wish that person would maybe take their energy and focus it on. In Central Africa, where they're raping women for punishment, where they're gang raping women for punishment, right. And try to make change in that kind of capacity. If that offends you, then that does offend you, and I can't deny that you are offended. But let's try to really like get rid of like actual rape. Like let's take it to the next level. And like I was listening on NPR about these guys. I want to say it's in Suriname or some, I'm making the name up, but you know what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Where like if a woman commits adultery, then the town's allowed to rape her. And you're like, holy fucking shit. How is that possibly going on in 2013 that is even like, that blows my mind. So why not, like, let's really fucking focus on the problem. Or, you know, I've often said I would love to go and start a campaign in high school where you talk to young boys and explain just the... No one explained the ins and outs of sexuality to me. Right. I only succeeded because of the way I was brought up in life with... Well, not with... I'm saying, like, it, by way of sexual assault. The reason I was never implicit in anything... I don't know if implicit's the right word, but the reason I never did any of that is only because I was brought up with sisters... And I've only had sex with 6 chicks, so I'm fucking a prude to begin with.
Right.
You know, like, but there are dudes who grew up with brothers and that almost was like, what? That's what you do. You fuck at 9. Mm-hmm. You know, you fuck at 13. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I would love to start a program where you go and talk to young boys in high school and just explain, hey, look, like, I know that you're going to get wrapped up in it. Does that make sense at all? Right.
No, totally. Yeah. There's nothing where you actually get taught. It's really bizarre. Like, you sort of just learn from friends in, like, a tree house.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, hey, did you hear my older brother did this to a girl with his finger?
Yeah.
And it's like, what? Where'd he put the finger?
Do you remember the first time you ever fingered a chick?
Yes.
Where were you?
I was in a baseball field in the middle of the night.
Such a romantic.
Yeah.
Does anyone have a romantic fingering story?
I don't think so. It's mine
was in
like
the,
a...
Mine was in the haunted house at Disney World.
Wow, the happiest place on earth.
For both of us. Except I didn't know you were supposed to do something with your finger, and I just put it in like I was taking your temperature.
Wow.
I literally, left-handed, just put it in.
And left it there.
Just left it. Like I was waiting for my finger to prune up or or for her to just be like, eh, excellent. Like I didn't know what the fuck...
And I just had an orgasm. Good job. You can remove it now.
And check. Perfect. Wait, what was yours?
Baseball
field?
Yeah, mine was a baseball field. Me and we were very youthful. I believe we were, what was I, 14? Something
that makes
like
sense.
That. Yeah. And yeah. It was a baseball field. Middle of the night, we went and sat down a sweatshirt because we had to get out of my place and we didn't want to necessarily like be... We were at... Our only chance to get away from everybody was to go to this park.
Were you at a party?
No. No, but we were at the place where my mom lived. So it was either, because I couldn't take her to the bedroom. I wasn't old enough yet to take a girl to my bedroom.
So how far was the baseball park?
It was only like a block away.
So you guys go to the baseball park.
Yeah.
You sit in like center field?
Yeah.
You got to sit in center field.
Left center.
You're in left center.
Yeah. Little blooper fly ball left center. I laid down. It was an Ohio State hoodie, I remember. Because
you probably weighed what, like 120?
Yeah. Maybe actually a lot less, actually. I think I was closer to like I was a 103 my freshman year in high school. My weight class was, so I was probably closer to that. 103. That's so funny to think of now.
You weighed less than my wife. Oh. So you're in left center, blooper left, you're playing Rover.
Yeah.
And
then it went down. I laid down my hoodie.
How quick was first kiss to penetration?
Pretty quick.
Yeah, right. Yeah. You had already established all the groundwork. It's almost like you've been having base meetings with lawyers for a while, and now it's litigation. And you just need to sit at the table and fucking put the deal points on the table.
Yeah,
that's so fucking funny. Mine happened. Mine happened like first ride before the ghost showed up. Like before, you know, the ghost rides with you.
Yeah.
I remember the ghost was riding with us. I know there's a comic that has a joke about this. I know that. But that I mean, I can't help that also happened to me. But I remember it was when you're facing each other that when you can see yourself in the mirror and the ghost in there. I remember that. So that's like within fucking 3 minutes.
Wow.
Yeah.
How long did you leave it in there?
The whole ride.
Whoa.
Like right when we were coming out, I was like, and I'll just pee.
Please keep your hands and feet inside your girlfriend at all times.
Oh, I remember that was like eighth grade, and I had blue balls that night.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Like hardcore.
Oh, man. Blue balls in eighth grade were just like, that was like, ugh, the worst.
Wait, when did you lose your virginity?
I think it was right around then. Right?
Holy
it was
shit.
All around the same time.
Same girl?
Yeah.
You still talk to her?
No.
You know what she's doing?
Yeah.
What?
She lives and works in the LA area doing something. She moved out here.
Are you serious?
Yeah, she dates one of my old best friends now.
Are you serious?
Yeah, it's pretty insane.
Shut up!
It's pretty funny. And they all live out here, both of them.
And there's... I'm imagining you kind of... You're well past... I mean, it's eighth grade.
Yeah, well, we dated all the way through basically to college and even a little bit in college.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was pretty intense. It's pretty awesome. It's one of those funny things to where, like, when I started stand-up, one of the big things that I was using as a driving force was like, yeah, I'm going to show her. I'm going to get her back.
Really?
I'm going to win. I'm going to be a hero because, you know, she's never going to see this one coming. Like...
I'm going to get famous.
Right. Totally. I'm going to get famous. I'm going to do it the right way. It's going to take a while, but then I'll go get the girl. But now, you know, I have an awesome girlfriend. And
it's amazing that, like, I got caught talking to all my college friends came out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all of them. They did. We ended up doing a podcast that I could never release because they were such... They're such horrible human beings that I can promise you people would start questioning me. That mm-hmm. You just have to be like, how can you be around people like that and it not rub off on you?
Right.
And so, but they were asking about my college girlfriend. My college girlfriend slept, I dated her for 5 years. She slept with my best friend and it was a fucking nightmare.
Yeah, that's bad.
Bad. And it was like, I really kind of should have gotten over it quicker, but I played the victim card in a weird way. Like
And how old were you?
It was right after I got back from Russia. So 22, 23.
Yeah, that's exactly right around then. I say 18 to 22, 23 is about the hardest time. I think that's when chemicals in the brain are really firing off and rewiring.
Yeah, because I really didn't have full control of my capacities.
At all, right?
Yeah.
I mean, and I was the same way. I was very depressed during that time, very sad, very mopey, very victim-y, just like what, you know, pretty much what you're saying about a lot of things, about the girlfriend, about just life, about career and everything. I, you know, I really didn't think that back then before I moved to LA and then started stand-up, you know, but back then I didn't really think that it was able to be done. Once I got to LA and got to the Comedy Store and did my first spot, I realized I could get a door job working the door at the Comedy Store and then learn and work my way up.
Yeah.
But before that, you know, I had no idea that you could actually have a career in it. It's hard to describe. So no. I had no spirit or faith in stand-up between 18 and 22 because I didn't start until I was 22. That's when the switches flipped, like, pa-ting! And then that's really when volume two, basically, of my life actually started, like, the good stuff.
Yeah.
But before stand-up, I was a miserable, miserable wreck.
Oh, yeah, I didn't know. It's interesting. I associate my beginning of stand-up with independence.
Yeah.
And emotional independence at that. Like, I remember saying, I'm having fun. I'm not getting fucking caught up with the chick.
Right.
Like, I started, that chick and I broke up, and then I started dating another girl who's great, who was really kind of, you know, I got to be honest with you, I have to give her a lot more credit than I have ever given her. The chick I dated, her name was Alex. She cheated on me, and I remember telling her one morning, it was the University of Miami Florida State game. Mm-hmm. We were in bed. And I think I'd been on a bus trip, and I'd always played guitar and sung silly songs at my fraternity, and I'd been on a bus trip, and the bus trip was, I got big laughs on the bus trip. I'd grab the mic at the front, and I'd do stand-up the whole way. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd just make jokes, and I pulled her aside, and I said, you know, we're laying in bed, and I was like, I think I know what I want to do with my life. I want to be a comedian. Mm-hmm. And I remember her telling me, oh, you're not funny. You're stupid funny.
Ooh.
But you're not, like, smart funny. Comedians are smart funny,
yeah.
And you're dumb funny.
Oof.
And I was like, ooh, note to self, do not tell anyone your secrets anymore.
Right.
So I never told anyone I wanted to be a stand-up. And then I dated Kristen Medock. Same girl I pissed on her dining room table.
Mm.
But, yeah, her family's dining room table. Her dad caught me in his underwear. It was a big fucking nightmare.
Whoa.
But, yeah, it was the hardest I've ever seen my dad laugh.
Did you think you were going to the bathroom?
I thought I was. I don't remember much of it, to be honest with you. I was pretty fucking drunk.
Yeah.
Rumor has it I ate a joint that night and then got locked in a pantry because I believed. It was a great story. It's not in my book, but it's a great story. I'm going to release it to kind of promote my book. But maybe it is in my book. I think it is in my book.
Mm-hmm.
I can't. Yeah, I'm almost certain it's in my book. I don't know. Anyway, you can pre-order my book at burtburtburt.com. The please pre-order. Pre-orders are so important. The Kristen Medock made me feel like I was the funniest guy she'd ever known, and she really kind of like told me, "God, you are funny. You should do this." Mm-hmm. She was not like when I started. She decided, I think she was cheating on me, or she was moving on with her own life, and we broke up. But she completely supported me getting into stand-up. And I remember thinking, and that little, it's amazing the little votes of confidence that you get. Like Erica Youngblood was a girl that I lived with in New York for a while. She was like fucking amazing. Just like, you can do this. You're the funniest guy I've ever fucking met. Those
right.
people, but the inspiration to fucking spur an ex-lover. The inspiration so that one day they look back, there's no... That power could mm-hmm. fucking drive a car.
And I honestly, now that I think about it, I don't know if I would, I don't know if I would be where I am without the first few years having that.
Yeah.
Like, I found out that she was dating my old best friend. This is recent. This is like in the past couple years. So that's year 6 and 7 of my 7 years doing stand-up. But had I known that early on, I think it may have... Maybe, I don't know, I doubt it actually, but it could have thrown me into a tailspin. But the having that drive in the first few years when you're broke and you're scraping together money to get a Subway footlong, and like, I mean, I was really struggling, and the light at the end of the tunnel was, oh, I'm gonna show her type
See,
of thing.
You're not fat though. One of the other things that's great is that when you're overweight and you're trying to show someone, and you're poor, and you're not eating, you're like, I'm losing fucking weight. I'm doing... You're like, you really are like... That's interesting. My chick wanted to be... The chick that I dated that cheated on me in college wanted to be an actress. She went to the School of Theater in Tallahassee at Florida State. She was like, destined to be an actress. And she was like, I'm going to fucking make it. I'm going to move to New York. I'm going to be an actress. I'm going to move to LA. I'm going to be an actress. And she married some dude. They moved to Tennessee. She did some like regional theater. And then I think at like 40 or 39, 38, she moved to New York to try to get into acting. And you just look at it like, it's, you know, yeah, just really bums you out that it bums you out that someone who I knew very well, that was her goal. She allows you to allow your goal. It's easy for me and you to say. And I guess if you're listening to this and you're thinking, but wait, I'm 38. Well, then don't. It's never too fucking late.
Right.
Do what you want to do. But I look at people that stop. I'm sure you get that. I know you get it if I get it. But they come up to you at the clubs and they're like, dude, I want to do stand up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what advice do you have? It's like, get on fucking stage.
Right. That's it. That's always my answer. 100% of the time. Yep. Get on stage.
Start it
do
now.
It every single night. You got to knock it out now. The first time's not going to go well. The first 100 times probably isn't going to go well. If it does, that's a bonus. You probably got lucky because you don't know what you're doing. So you just got to chip away at anything. And I think it goes that way with anything. I think if you want to be the lead guitar player in a hit rock and roll band, you got to start right now. You got to go work on a solo. Get it going. Knock it out. Anything.
Yeah. Listen to me and you giving a self-help tub.
Right.
So wait, now have you ever... you lose your virginity to this chick. You're like fucking 15,
uh-huh,
right?
Mm-hmm.
You guys date all through...
Yeah.
All through, mm-hmm, high school,
mm-hmm,
college?
A little bit. Freshman
little bit,
year.
Freshman year?
Yep.
And then it's over.
Yeah.
Do you... Do what I do and stay celibate a ridiculous amount of time.
Yes.
Or do you start really?
Yeah, I ruined it. I was very, very depressed. It was a bad time in my life. It was never that dark. It was never that bad. What happened was I had an amazing job. I was a food runner at a Ruth's Chris steakhouse in Columbus, Ohio. I was making like $400 a night, working 3 or 4 hours a night, which to me then, being from Youngstown and then being in Columbus, and you don't even hear that you can make $300 or $400 a night doing anything, not to mention 3 or 4 hours of just running, of literally picking up a tray of food and sitting it at a table. I mean, I didn't even have to serve the table. A server would follow me. I would just have to, a tray would have a number on it, table 35.
Shut.
I would sit it next to table 35. So with all this extra money, I started getting into fine cigars, and then next thing you know, I'm into fine liquors, and I have all these different bottles of liquor, and then everything crashes down. I lose the girl. I'm not really doing what I want to be doing. I'm settling. And I just started drinking so much in the worst of ways, drinking by myself.
That's not bad.
Doing movie research. Like, I got way into movies at this point. Like, having a girl wasn't even an option. I was just obsessed with getting drunk by myself and watching movies.
Really?
Ugh.
What movie defines that period of your life?
That period of my life? Great question. Four Rooms. Isn't that weird?
Really?
Because the period is dark and it's not good and it's creepy, but towards the end it got really good and sort of real and amazing and aware and in the moment. And I think that's exactly how that movie is. I think I've seen it a few times since then, because I remember that's really when I was learning about like this whole Tarantino thing, and that movie has Tim Roth killing it. It's a cool movie, but it's... Has
I always
four
get
rooms.
That and Dunstan Checks In mixed up.
Oh, I don't know Dunstan Checks In.
It's the one with the monkey.
Hotel one? Where he wears the little bellboy hat?
Yeah.
But Tim Roth kills it in this movie, but each one of the four rooms is directed by a different director. And
yeah,
the first two really aren't that great, but the third one is Robert Rodriguez.
Dude, I've never seen anything Robert Rodriguez has done.
What?
I've never seen anything Robert Rodriguez has done.
Are you serious?
And every time I go, God damn it, it's like I'll go to watch a movie and I'll be like, I'll watch a movie. I go, damn it, I meant to watch Machete Kills or what was the one?
I wouldn't start there. He has much better movies than that.
What's the one he did?
Desperado, Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
Once Upon a Time in Mexico is one I want to see.
Oh, yeah, you got it.
Maybe I'll see that tonight.
Oh, you really should.
Oh, it's Chinese New Year, so I'm getting fucking hammered.
Nice.
I've been on the wagon. I fell off the wagon for your, whatchamacallit.
I had a feeling that was going to happen. Kill Tony brings that out in people.
It was so much fucking fun. So that Four Rooms.
Yeah, and I remember enjoying that movie, but I remember every time I hear or think of that movie, it reminds me of that period. That living room, that situation with the, you know, big bottle of Jack or whatever it was, you know what I mean? And just cigars. And it was just very weird. I was very I was alone for the first time in my life, you know, and I sort of liked that, but it wasn't safe for me because, again, I had all those chemicals. You're like depressed. You don't know what your direction you're going. You're by yourself, which is fun. So you get to do whatever you want. I remember going out to very fancy dinners by myself and loving it, sort of. It's a very weird time in my life. And I think no 18, 19, 20 year old should be allowed to have a job where they make that much money. To have that much disposable income, $300 or $400 a night, 5 nights a week, is way too much money for me back then, at least.
I did. I had a period like that where after my first couple TV shows and first couple development deals, I had a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no girlfriend and I had no job and I had nothing to do. And I just would go to Yamashiro every single night.
Yeah.
I went to Yamashiro so much that I... didn't the last time I went was probably, I'll say, 2003. Mm-hmm. I showed up in 2010 with my wife, and I walked in, and everyone recognized me.
Wow.
That's how much I went to. Well, I also was very wealthy at the time, and I was tipping a lot.
Wow.
Like, I would just go. I would order whatever I want. I'd drink until I couldn't. Mm-hmm. I'd drink until I literally was like, I felt like I was drunk, and I could walk. I'd walk home because I lived in the hills. Mm-hmm. I was in really good shape, and I'd walk home, and then I'd fucking have beers at home and smoke a cigar. But I had no money, and then I'd wake up the next morning. I'd go to spin class, but it was like I went back. The waitress's name was Risa. I only remember that because she was Asian, and she would tell people her name was Risa, and they would say Lisa. And she would go, no, Risa. And I was always uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And I remember they saw me and they were like, Bert! And I mean, I was like, fuck. I had children. I brought children with me. Wow. I had children when I went back. And Leanne was like, can you believe they still remember you? And they went back and they got other waiters that still worked there. And they're like, Bert's here. And they brought him out. And they were like, oh, my God.
Wow.
I mean, that's how much I went there. But that those periods,
mm-hmm.
I heard the term, around that time, I heard the term salad days. Have you ever heard that term?
Mm-mm.
Your salad days are like when you first started working at the store.
Mm-hmm.
Those are your salad days. It's basically a salad. It's like the appetizer of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, you get that first, and in a weird way, you're the hungriest. I'm doing an analogy to a term I've heard.
That is,
and
I'm great.
Plugging it in a little bit. But you're the hungriest. You wolf it down. Mm-hmm. It's good for you. Mm-hmm. It's like it's your salad days. It's like the very beginning, and it's all a mix of a bunch of shit you can't really figure out. And I missed my salad days in New York. Were in New York, and I'd say also in L.A. I think I learned a lot about myself living in L.A. I learned a lot of bad things about myself living in L.A. But like after all the TV shows ran out. And all the money ran out. Those were a new set of salad days. Being a broke parent,
mm-hmm.
dude, there's no explaining it to someone who hasn't been there. But when you're a broke parent, there's a connection. It's almost a connection you have with a lot of parents, and you have a hard time connecting with parents that have never gone through it. Like parents that have adults your age that have children that are like, yeah, you know, we got married, we bought a house, and then you know. It's been great. Everything's been great.
Right.
But like when you're broke and you're like, I remember going to play poker one time and the buy-in was $100 and Tosh was picking me up and I was broke. I was really broke. And I asked Leanne for $100 and she was like, we don't have it. And I was like, just give me $100. She's like, no, we do not have $100. I was like, Leanne. She's like, no, we don't have it. And I was like, are you fucking... like, how do I get... well, give me a card to go get $100. She goes, it's not in an account. You cannot find it. Like, I don't know what to tell you. And I remember being we don't have $100. Like, just... I understand that, but I'm going to win tonight, so I'm going to have more money. And she was like, no, you do not have... we do not... I cannot find $100 for you. And I was like... I remember not understanding the concept. Mm-hmm. And then Tosh picked me up, and Tosh was like, didn't... he's always done well, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I had to go to this poker game and borrow $100 from a friend. But wow. I was like, I remember being like, I don't have $100 like that. And then getting in bed that night being like, and I won. I remember to Tosh's credit, he was like, I'll walk in 10 minutes after you do. Pretend we don't know each other. Never go all in if I'm all in a hand. And if you're all in, I won't go all in on you. Got it? And I was like, done.
That's awesome.
But yeah. those moments, though, like you're working at the store or you going through that time, like you have professional and I think emotional salad days. Mm-hmm. And like those moments, like you look back, like my movie of heartbreak that I go, that is the movie when I see it, I remember being heartbroken. Mm-hmm. Is not as good, but it's Fight Club. Mm. Like that was like the one that I was like, this will bounce me out of it.
Yeah,
man, shit. Mm-hmm. Like that's the way I come back to this cave time. Like you've been wounded, you're the bear. Go to your cave, breathe, let it go away, and then you can go back out and hunt again.
Right?
Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, totally.
So have you talked to this chick since?
No. Nope.
Really?
Yeah, it's pretty bizarre. It's weird. Like, we almost saw each other a couple times and, like, a few years ago, and it just didn't happen. I remember one time I had a show. She lived down in Long Beach. I had a show at, like, the Brea Improv or something like that. I'm like, hey, come to the Brea Improv, bobbity ba. I'll throw you on the guest list. I think I was with Jeff Ross or something. And, it was going to be the big reunion, and she came out and she gave me a call. And I remember picking up the phone. It's like 20 minutes before the show starts. She's like, I'm here, but they said that you're not here tonight. I'm like, what do you mean? She goes, I'm on Melrose. And I'm like, oh, you're at the Hollywood Improv. Oh,
thank God you got rid of this chick.
Right.
No, what a exactly. Fucking moron.
Right. No, it's so true. And, you know, the funniest part of really the whole thing is that I know that her and I know that I wouldn't like her now.
Yeah.
She's very, like, religious in a creepy way and just very, I don't know, it's just, she tries to, like, fix people. Make people bitter.
And Dynasty, it's like, you have a picture of her?
No.
Is she on Facebook?
Oh, my God. Yeah, she's on Facebook.
Here, wait. Type her name on Facebook so okay. I can see what she looks like.
Okay.
Fucking dying. And then I'll show you.
The funny thing is that she's probably with my best friend in her profile
pic. Here, I'll show you the chick. I'll show you the chick that cheated on me. Okay. Watch this.
If it's the same girl, I'm going to...
Here. This is the chick. Ooh.
Wow. Yeah. Wow.
Pretty hot.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. She's
beautiful. You want me to type my...
Yeah. Here's Facebook. Yeah, so what I was saying is my friends were here and they were all asking me about her. Because my friends, the whole way my friends from college work is if you the meanest you can be to each other means the most you love each other. Mm-hmm. Like that we just hurt each other's feelings. I mean, we said things to each other that my wife was listening and was like, are you sure you guys are friends? I was like, no, that's how we, like one of our friends that just died and one of our friends that was in the room, that they were actually like best friends. They did everything together.
You have a mutual friend as her.
Really?
Yeah. That's really not a great picture of her. She's wearing a...
We have a mutual friend. Mm-hmm. Going to photos. No photos to show. Oh, damn it. Just this one?
Who's your mutual friend? That's the real question.
Are you ready for this?
The big release.
We have a mutual friend?
The plot thickens.
Oh, it must be a comic. No. You know him? We have 567 mutual friends.
Really?
So I'm sure he's a comic.
I'm not sure.
Here, look, watch. I'll tell you. Me and him have mutual friends are...
Oh.
Wait. Is he from Tampa? I don't see... Oh, yeah, comedian. Yeah, it's all comedians. He must be a comedian. He must know mm-hmm. her through comedy. I don't know. Some comics are just like that. They spend as opposed to writing jokes, they update their friend list and they add right. more friends. That's how they do it. And then he's friends with Owen. Mm-hmm. He's friends with, Mike Black. Mm-hmm. I don't know this guy. There's, let's see what it looks like. I wonder if this is interesting to people listening, just us going through Google. No, he's not even real. All his pictures are fucking of their avatars. I can't stand that.
Yeah.
Fucking own your avatar. Do you understand Reddit at all?
A little bit. I actually love Reddit.
Really?
Yeah.
I was on the front page of Reddit today, but I don't know how to monetize that.
Well, that's sort of like, it's sort of like a free podcast is what that is. Like,
yeah.
Being on the front page of Reddit is just a brand new forum of people who, that's how they find what they like and that's what they do. So it's good to, it monetizes itself. It's free advertising. It's like, it's like being on a billboard
that
randomly puts things up. Cool thing about Reddit is the part of it called Today I Learned. That's what you should check out. Like, Reddit's just a blob of stuff happening on the internet. But if you look at the top bar, there's a bunch of really cool things that you can click on. It's like news, world news, ask me anything. But there's a part called Today I Learned where people post cool things that they just learned about that are like amazing fun facts about the world and or anything really, but it has to cite a source, so it'll normally take you to like Wikipedia or a Time article or something like that. But like, I've learned so much awesome stuff off of there. It's normally what I do right before I fall asleep is just learn like cool things. Like, did you know Reno is west of Los Angeles?
No.
Yep. If you look at it on a map, it's insane.
Did you know you know what always amazed me? What is it? Rio is east of Tampa.
Did you know Cleveland is east of Tampa?
No.
Look it up.
Shut up. Look, no. Cleveland's not east of Tampa.
Okay.
Cleveland's not east of Tampa.
Okay.
Although I did get into an argument with Ari Shaffir last week about how many terms Barack Obama served.
Oh, how many did you say?
One. And I was fucking adamant. I was... so adamant. I was like, Ari, you're a fucking moron. Ari's like, no, I'm pretty sure he served two terms. I go, who did he run against the second time? And Ari's like, I have no idea. And we couldn't remember. And then I Googled it and I was like, oh, I guess you're right.
Mitt Romney.
Yeah. I told Ari, I said, the Mexican.
Yeah.
All right. Here is. Shot a man in Reno. Where is Reno?
It's above and to the left.
Shit.
Isn't that crazy?
Reno's west of L.A. There's no way. You got to be right about Cleveland, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
Let's see. Cleveland.
This one will blow your mind.
In Ohio.
Since you're from Tampa.
Columbus. No. Cleveland. Cleveland.
Tampa.
Shut the fuck up. Are you shitting me?
How about this one? One last one. What's directly south of Detroit?
Directly south of Detroit?
Canada. Boom.
What?
Check it out. This is the Learning with Bert.
Directly south of Detroit.
See that weird little island?
Oh, motherfucker.
Yep.
This is you all learned this on Reddit?
Yeah.
I learned, do you know what my favorite thing is now? Is Zeit. Do you ever? It's
is
great.
Is that like that?
No, Zeit is just, you type in your interest and then it pulls up things that are your interest. Sadly, I put in working out. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not really one of my interests, but it's something I try to do better.
Right.
But now all I get is workout shit. Like, ooh, want to get into a power yoga? I'm like, how to change my metabolism. 21 ways to burn fat. Killer kettlebell worker. These are mommy's workouts. Like, these are all I get. But then you get the interesting one. Leanne Rimes is in a custody war. I'm also gossip. They must think I'm a housewife. I'm into Hollywood gossip. I love Hollywood
and
gossip.
Yoga.
But then you get something like this. Oh my God! Look at that!
Wow!
Oh, have you been on NS not safe for work NSFW dump on Twitter?
No,
I'm obsessed with it.
But that's another part of Reddit that you could really get into.
Really?
Oh, you could type anything into the Reddit search bar, and you'll find the most amazing things.
I gotta get on Reddit. Is there like an app for your phone, or do you have to be using your computer?
I think you could just go to reddit.com on your phone and go right off there. I'm sure they have an app for the phone, but it's so much fun on the computer.
So the first time you have sex after you get dumped, I'm guessing you got dumped.
Yeah, pretty much. It was like a mutual. It was over. It was way over. I was trying to keep it going because I had nobody else and I was lonely. She was living like the true college life. She was, you know, in a dorm with like girlfriends and like.
Is this in Columbus?
Yeah.
At Ohio State.
Yeah.
What a great fucking school.
Oh, it's amazing. But I lived off of campus, way up north,
you
like
make
20
total
minutes.
Fucking sense. Knowing who you are now makes total fucking sense.
Yeah. Had I lived on campus, I would have been a total douchebag. and miserable for the rest of my life. Luckily, I lived way up there, and which also, by the way, changed my life completely, was living off campus in a weird way, because what ended up happening was with the 20-minute drive to the south, I was listening to Howard Stern, who was on terrestrial radio at the time, and by the time I would drive to the class and pull into the parking lot, I was so into Stern that I couldn't turn it off. So I'd literally be sitting in the parking lot of a college class, being able to look through the window at the class that I paid for out of my own money being taught, and just thinking to myself, I can't get out of the car. They're about to start the news with Robin. I'm too into this. And I would just be thinking of what I would say or what I would contribute. And I mean, it was so, so great back then. I mean, that's like 2003, 2004.
And, yeah, I remember listening to Stern. He was still on terrestrial, and I was in L.A., and I could listen to Stern. And I remember he just started – I want to say he just started coming on. I just started listening to him in L.A., and I remember being like in a car going like, I can't get out of the fucking car.
Exactly.
Such a great feeling, by the way, when you do radio, when you hear someone say, I was at work and I couldn't get out of the car, and you're like – if you're a fan of radio, and I am a huge fan of radio. I've been a fan of radio since I was a kid. Like, I love that forum. I love that delivery system of personality, because it's the truest form, I believe, that you get. Not always. A lot of times you get a lot of hacks who like, hey, welcome back.
Right.
You know, like, hey, we got some. Like, those. Yeah, and you run into those, you're like, no. But when you hear it done really well,
right,
like Stern,
oh, yeah,
like when you listen to Stern, that is. I mean, there are a lot of guys. I could sit and name everyone, but everyone will acknowledge that Stern is probably the king.
Yeah.
And so you, all my friends that do radio will hear this and go, well, at least he's mentioning Stern and not other people that
right.
they compete against. But, man, it's fucking good.
It's amazing how he does. I mean, there's not even like a close second to me in radio. Something about the way that he can do radio takes me away more than a movie or than a song, than a lot of different mediums. I mean, it's really unbelievable how comforting. I don't know what it is, whether you just feel safe with his deep voice, or whether he's just in control, or it's the staff or the crew, or it's a little bit of everything, but man, something. I mean, I can see why he can pull off the king of all media, because he's so entertaining, and to do it in out of a forum like radio, which just seems like it'd probably be the hardest. It's amazing.
Goal of yours to be on his show?
Oh, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Goal of mine just to be able to thank him in passing quickly and conveniently.
I've never met him. I would love to. That's a goal of mine, to do his show, just because I am the perfect vessel for him, because I have a lot of things that I would like to consider secrets, but I am an open fucking book to a guy like that. Like, I end up telling everything.
Yeah.
The kind where you lay in bed after and you're like, I really regret that. That was a big mistake.
Yeah.
Like, I am the sweet spot for a guy like that. I got into radio thinking that's how you do good radio, is just tell him fucking everything. Mm-hmm. Be 100% honest. Because you'd hear like Andy Dick call in drunk,
right,
or you'd hear like David Arquette or you know, anyone on that show just be fucking vulnerable, and you liked them that much more.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Totally. And he's the best interviewer. I mean, you could listen to Howard Stern interview anybody and it'll be
He interviewed the fucking Nick and Aaron Carter.
From NSYNC?
The NSYNC kid and his brother.
Uh-huh.
And his little brother. He interviewed them, and I'm like, I remember driving in upstate New York through windy roads going, are you fucking kidding me? I have no interest. They came in, and it was like, and like just the energy of them walking in the room, that energy when he brings someone right. in the room, he's like, here they come. Here they come. Hey, guys. And you can hear them off.
Yeah. There he is.
Yeah.
Hey.
Hey, how you doing, man? It's good to see you. Good to see you again, Robin. You know, like that kind of,
right.
And you get, and then you're like, wow, I'm in.
Yeah.
The interview started.
Yeah,
and it was the fucking most, I was literally on the edge of my seat. We listened to Stern, me and my crew listened to Stern, the retrospective of Stern interviews the cast of Friends. And it was all the interviews they'd done with the cast of Friends. Or Stern, we were in Montana, Stern interviews the cast of Seinfeld. And it was like, over the 10-year period, it was all the interviews he had with them, and it was talking about... It was fucking amazing.
Yeah. He's the best.
Yeah.
And I love the news with Robin, and of course they end every episode with that. So I literally was witnessing my own dropping out of college and my changing of career goals literally from the inside of my car because of Howard Stern. I mean, I would be making a conscious, fully aware decision like, I'm skipping class again today, even though I drove here 20 minutes and woke up at 7:30 in the morning, even though I was, again, you know, drinking and smoking pot by myself the night before.
Yeah.
I was fully aware in thinking, so this is the 19th class that I've missed this month in a row. I'm obviously not going to pass this class, so what am I doing? And that added up with my brother living in LA already, him saying, dude,
what was your brother doing?
He's a bartender and a baseball umpire.
Really?
Interesting combination, right?
Like a professional baseball umpire? Minor, like...
More like college, high school.
Really?
Summer leagues, yeah. Really great gig. I did that for a little bit when I first got here. Awesome job.
I can't imagine you as an umpire.
So much fun.
I would love to be an umpire.
Well, you know, I could see why you couldn't imagine me as an umpire, but the reason why is because when you put on that gear and you look in the mirror and your belt and your gray pants and the blue shirt and the spikes and the... And the chest protector, yeah. You become a different guy. You really do. There's a switch that gets flipped in which it's baseball time. And when you walk onto the field and you meet the two managers on the pitcher's mound and
remind me. Oh, my God. Hold on, everybody. Hold on. Secret time. Sorry, guys. Tony and I just had a secret moment that I can't share with you. But... Anyway, that would be fun. Being a fucking umpire would be fun as shit. I have a visual, by the way, of you put in your brother's apartment, putting on the fucking uniform, putting on the chest protector, the mask, the cleats, the pants, the shirt, and like getting all ready, and then walking out to the car and then taking it all off, putting it in the trunk, and then getting in the car and driving away. Like, just such a weird visual. So in a weird way, it's amazing. It's like, for anyone going through heartbreak, those moments, they define you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I wouldn't be where I am today if that chick hadn't slept with my best friend.
Right.
At all.
Right.
I wouldn't be as happy as I am today.
No doubt about it. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
It makes you. And I guess it's almost like science. It's like every action has an opposite reaction or whatever. I think that works in that aspect as well. I mean, getting your heart broken and that sadness and that depression could come back in a different way. You know, it can turn into that anger can turn into hunger and, you know, wanting to prove a point. And, you know, so I think it, in a weird way, it sort of helps.
It's like it's also the way you use it, the way, like, there are people that you got to have the grieving period. But there are people who go, oh, I'm going to let it defeat me. I'm just going to date the next chick I find.
Right.
I mean, I would run through periods of celibacy. My joke that I had was, I was celibate for so long that the first time I had an orgasm with someone else, I was shocked there was someone in the room. I was like, wow, this is awkward. This normally I do this by myself.
You're not a paper towel.
Yeah. you're staring at me. Like, this is... It was so weird because you have so many orgasms by yourself.
Right.
And the first time someone joins in on one, you're like, whoa, this is vulnerable.
You're so used to masturbating, you just blow the load on your own chest.
Yeah.
Just
turn on History Channel. Right. I normally take naps right now. This isn't meaning anything to me. God, man, that's fucking... Yeah, that's interesting. You look at the heartbreak. It's almost like you want to get heartbroken just to get to the next level in your career.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, in a weird way. It's almost like some kind of secret vitamin or something. So, I don't know. It's
vitamin B, vitamin break.
Yeah.
That was kind of fucking cheesy. That's fucking... I'm amazed by that because, I think when you go through the heartbreak, you just are so overwhelmed by it. Mm-hmm. You don't see the light on the other. I remember walking through Washington Square Park on my way to Barnes & Noble. It was hot. It was summer. I had been dumped by this girl Kristen Medock, and I was heartbroken, but not as bad as the first time. I was like, I can bounce back, but I remember I was very heartbroken, and I remember walking through the park, seeing people laughing and holding hands and smiling, thinking, what do they have to be happy about? Mm-hmm. Don't they realize that this is on the other end of that? Mm-hmm. Like, that can only lead to what I'm going through. Their happiness leads to this.
Right.
This is the definitive fucking ending to that right there. Mm-hmm. That never works. 50% of people get divorced. That never works out.
Right.
And I remember thinking that, and I could not be optimistic. And I got on a train that night, and I went to Philly to see my cousin Abe. I remember I was drinking a lot, and I was just like, I don't fucking see the joy in life. Like, I just...
Yep.
And then you just... One day it starts lightening up.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, that's not so bad. I got things going on.
Right.
And then you got to remember, then I got to deal with Will Smith. And I was like, fuck yeah. I'm back, bitches.
Yeah.
I got a new apartment. And we didn't have furniture in it. And I got to deal with Will Smith all in the same fucking week. And I was like, real talk? I can fucking kick some shit around here. And then all of a sudden, and then you get cocky. And then you fall in love. And then you get heartbroken again. Motherfucker.
Yeah. Never ends.
So what's on the horizons for Tony Hinchcliffe?
Well, working on a couple TV show ideas just for, you know, like for myself, trying to figure out how to do something. And, but I, you know, I'm really loving stand up. Gonna obviously still work on the roasts when they happen. And I, you know, I do like private roasts here and there. Like I roasted the Iron Sheik a couple times last year. Yeah. In Toronto, which was a lot of fun. And, you know, so I'm a gun for hire. I'm having a lot of fun with Kill Tony right now. That's really
it's a great
off.
Fucking podcast. Yeah. What number was one Tom and I were
35.
On? 35. Number 35. Go to number 35, Kill Tony. Mm-hmm. It was, I laughed as hard at what they said as what we said mm-hmm. as the whole event. It is a great podcast. Yeah. I said I'd do it anytime. I really will do it any Monday, Monday night.
I can't wait to have you back.
So yeah,
it's so much fun. Get to watch stand-up comedians starting out and comedians' opinions on comedy and how they started, and it's really just about, you know, the root of stand-up.
It really makes you self-conscious the way you write a joke too. Like that one girl had the joke about dick pics, and I automatically go to a little bit of a hacky place because that's what I would do if I had a new joke. I always go to the fucking laugh first, and then try to work it out that way.
Right.
So like I go to the place to get the laugh, and then I try to get the better laugh.
Right.
But I can't do a joke with no laugh.
Right.
And I can't count on the obscure laugh. I count on the little laugh to the next laugh, and it's so funny. I was like, I feel how hacky I am, and then I said the little laugh, which is. I forget what it is, but like my boyfriend sends me dick pics, and he gets creative with it. And I was like, my punch up was because he has to because he's white my joke was.
And then we started talking about splitting up the shaft from the head and all that.
Dude, I
yeah.
Take a look at this.
Turned into a great one.
I was going to tweet this yesterday. This was my because Red Band posted a picture of his shaft. This was my shaft pic.
That's your thumb.
That's my thumb. Oh. Well, Tony, man, I appreciate you doing this, man. I had a blast. It's
so
good
much
to
fun.
It's the one of the greatest things that's happened to me these past couple years is getting to know other comics.
Yeah.
So I've just been in this little microcosm of me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a fucking blast, man. You're a great dude.
Thanks.
And I had a fucking fun time doing your podcast.
So much fun. I mean, you killed so hard. Twitter's been blowing up the last few days.
Well, everyone that listens to this, go check out episode 35 of Kill Tony. Rate, review, subscribe. Mm-hmm. It is a fun fucking podcast.
It's at DeathSquad.tv and on iTunes under the Death Squad name.
Death Squad for life.
Yeah.
Now, and then follow Tony. You're at Tony Hinchcliffe.
Yep.
I love that shirt you have too, by the way, that...
H plus inch, Cliff plus E.
Yeah, it's great. It
teaches you how to spell the name, gives you a little insight.
I also like the golden pony.
That's a fun one.
That's a good one. I wouldn't mind one of those, like an XL, whatever.
Well, I think one's going to magically appear in your man cave one of these days.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tony Hinchcliffe. Thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks.
I appreciate it. This episode was brought to you by The Machine.